Hello and welcome to episode 9 of Just Keep Writing,
a podcast for writers by writers to keep you writing.
I'm Marshall.
And I'm Nick.
What's up, buddy?
Been two weeks. How you doing? I know, right? And so far, no one's said anything weird to me about our last episode. So I feel like I'm in the clear.
You're in the clear?
I'm in the clear. No one's been sad, soppy, and like, oh my gosh, I'm so sorry for you. Which, it's okay, but...
Well, and I'm with you, and I went through and listened to... Obviously, I listened to all the episodes multiple times to edit them, but listening back, you know, I cut a few things here and there, but, like, the story was good, man, and I think people need to know that, you know, why we're at where we're at, and I think it's important, so...
Absolutely, because for me, it's my truth about writing.
Yeah.
And if writing is something you want to do and accomplish in life, I think you need to find your why behind it, other than, oh, I just want to be published one time. Mm-hmm. 'Cause I think there's always deeper emotional meanings behind things that we do.
Especially things we want to do for a long time.
Yeah. Well, and there's so much emotion that goes into writing a book.
Yeah, absolutely. Speaking of writing and stuff, top of the show stuff. Usually we talk about conferences and stuff we're going to, but you went to a conference, my friend.
Woohoo! I did. I went to Futurescapes, as many of you know, and if you're in the Discord channel, you guys already know that I was not entirely sold on it. Mm. But it was up here in Park City, Utah, at a ski resort, taking place 3 days after it shut down for the ski season.
Oh, Lord.
So, imagine a 1980s cozy, warm feeling ski resort that's basically half shut down and under construction.
Oh,
that was my week. The only restaurant open within walking distance, because there's only here at the top of a mountain at this point, was the sister resort. And it was like $30 for a burger and fries. And everyone was like, it's not close to worth it. So a lot of people had to shuttle down to get food and stuff like that. There was no real amenities. So if you needed to pick anything extra up or like you wanted snacks, you had to try to catch a 30-minute shuttle down to the grocery store and wait for it to come back.
Was this – now, and I'm curious because this is the first time hearing this stuff. Is this – typical for Futurescapes? Is they always do it here?
I don't know, to be honest with you. This is, I mean, it's under construction this year, which is why I think it caused a lot of issues.
Right.
But I mean, it's a nice resort. I really enjoyed my room. Like, each room has its own little fireplace.
Oh, that's sweet.
But
there's a lot of snow from a lot of the pictures I saw.
Yes, it snowed the entire time.
Oh, man.
So, which is crazy to think, but... Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Shout out to everyone that did go and was there and gained a lot of information and knowledge and skills. For me, I think Writing Excuses Retreat ruined me because I had way higher expectations of it. And so it just didn't live up to my personal expectations. So,
now, can I ask you a couple questions?
Oh, yeah, of course.
So what was the class to writing time ratio? And it was over 3 days?
So technically it was the 11th through the 14th.
Okay.
And here's the catch though, right? You're like, oh yeah, the 11th through the 14th. Well, the 12th and the 13th were the only 2 days that you guys actually did something. It was 4 hours each day.
Okay.
And then if you wanted to take any of the classes offered, it was another $90 per class.
Ooh, okay.
And those took place throughout the 11th and 13th.
Oh, I see. Okay.
And then the 14th was a checking out of the hotel and one last meetup with one of your critique groups if you had any more questions. So
okay. So 14th was – okay. So it was really 3 days, 2 days of
– workshopping.
Workshopping. Okay. So okay. That gives me a good base. So my other question is, what was your critique like? If you don't mind me asking, since this is a writing podcast, and I know you've been prepping for this critique for a bit, you sent me a quick text saying it happened. I was on vacation. I wrote you back and said, how did it go? And you didn't say much back. And so I'm just curious because critiquing can be nerve-wracking and gnarly, but I don't know, man. How many so set the stage. How many people were there? How many words was it? And what was the format for the critique session, if you don't mind me asking?
Okay. So, and I don't mind. I enjoy it. It was 7 people. So 6 of us were peers, and then we had one professional author with us that was running it.
Okay.
And so the author that I had attached to my group was Emily R. King, who she's amazing. She writes YA fantasy. Nice. She's cool. She was really fun. She's all about highlighting the good and encouraging people rather than beating someone down and telling them that their work sucks.
Right.
Which I mean is great. That's kind of what I align with when it comes to critiques and stuff like that. You know, she's about building people up. So it was a really good critique. Everyone, we started off with the good, and then we started off not with the bad, but with the critique of areas mm-hmm. where we think there could be improvement, questions we had, or things we would have liked to see more.
Okay.
So that format, and then went each person, we all got 30 minutes each. It's nerve-wracking until you get in there. I haven't touched this. The piece that I'm working right now, which is the current novel of, I'm up to like 40,000 words on it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I haven't touched it since I submitted it back at the beginning of March.
Oh, okay.
So, because I wanted an emotional distance from it, and that actually really helped out. I'm an emotional person. I get attached to my own works. Okay.
Of course.
I'll admit it.
And it's hard to have your stuff under, not really under fire, but under fire. I mean, it's hard to have your stuff like out there and then have people say, and I like the phrasing that you use, you know, the what was lacking, what you wanted more of. I think what you wanted more of, I think is super important, right?
Yeah.
Because that isn't, a nice way of saying this is where you need to give the reader what you've promised, right? And that's something that I think when you're really close to a work that doesn't come across, especially if it's a work in progress.
Yeah. I mean, for me personally, what I took away in my own pieces of work was, and this is the same one I workshop with, the cruise that we went on mm-hmm. for Reading Excuses.
You didn't tell me that.
Oh, I didn't? It's the same piece.
Is it the same piece? Okay,
it's the cool. same piece I took to Writing Excuses, which I started 2 months before we even went on that cruise.
Mm-hmm.
And the fascinating part for me was I got almost the identical feedback.
Okay.
And it was, and I thought I had improved on it, but I still need to outline my main character sooner. They want the POV from the main character way sooner.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone wants to know more about the technology I have built, not the magic.
Right.
One of the good things I got back was, what are the stakes? Because I open up and within the first 100,000 words, like, I've got my main character and his little posse fighting a wyvern.
Right.
So they don't know what the stakes are. Like, why is that such a bad thing and stuff like that? So it was like, now that I'm disengaged from it, I totally see what you guys are saying. I can make my adjustments now
mm-hmm.
and hopefully improve and probably add a longer introduction before the fight scene.
All right. Well, and this is something that I have found in not necessarily critiquing, but in what I'm hearing from like agents and stuff. Like after all the conversations we had, like on the cruise, for example, and the feedback I got way back in the day with some of my earlier work, is like, okay, so, and actually, to even preface that a little bit more, I submitted something to one of those deals where you get some feedback on your first pages, you know? And what was interesting about that was I got the opposite of what you just got. It was like, okay, you know, you're showing, you're telling, not showing, right?
Yep.
And then not only that, start, you know, while something's happening. So I think what's the mixed message is that a lot of us think, okay, we need to start in the middle of some action, right? So you start in the middle of action, but then they come back and they say, okay, well, I don't know what the stakes are. So there's got to be some sort of balance in that, because I feel like I've gotten both things. You know what I mean? And I just feel like it almost has to do with who's reading it. But also, I don't know. I don't really know exactly how to phrase what I'm saying, but I feel like I get the opposite messages about the same piece sometimes. Does that make sense?
Yeah. So out of my six people, I had, or seven, six mm-hmm. that critiqued me, three of them were around almost the same things. And then there's three of them that were scattered. They didn't align with each other, but they were on the opposite end of the spectrum.
Okay.
So, and I even asked Emily this too. I was like, I don't know how to take some of this feedback. Like, I just don't know. Like, and she was like, look, take it how you want. Like, you have a great start of some stuff. And I know, like, you're going to keep going with it and mm-hmm. fix a couple things here. And she's like, just go with it, whether you want, take what you want into consideration. She said herself, when she does critique groups on her own, she only takes about 30% of what's being said and applies it.
Yeah.
So it's like, it's good information to have, like, and it's good to get beta readers too afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
But I think I'm on par with you when you're in a critique group and someone who's not a typical reader of your current work, that's where I feel like it gets a little off.
Right. And those are the ones I think you have to kind of say, okay, thanks for your feedback, but kind of set that aside and keep it in the mm-hmm. back of your mind. But, you know, and like I said, if I give somebody not my current work in progress, but the one I've set aside, kind of like you did actually, if I give them that piece and they weren't a fan, you know, if they didn't read fantasy, for example, or weren't into fantasy, for example, that would be mm-hmm. a really tough. I think I would get a whole lot different feedback from that than I would somebody that did read fantasy. You know what I'm saying?
Right. No, so I agree with you on that one.
And I think the genre part of it is also kind of throws a wrench in the critique groups and stuff as well. So anyway, just something I was thinking about while you were talking. But anyway.
Yeah. No, I mean, it makes sense. I think that's what I saw in my stuff. Mm-hmm. It was me and one other person that we had.
Were you the only two fantasy authors?
No, everyone was fantasy.
Okay.
Not really fantasy. There was one, she had a dark horror story that she was working on, which was great.
Okay.
And then I'll give her a shout out, Kelly Dwyer. Mm. She submitted one called The Wishing Tree, and that's a TBD title, but it was great. I loved it.
Awesome.
But it's more of a suspense thriller / horror dark fantasy type thing. One of them was like, it's like a medieval love story.
Okay. So you had a little bit of everything. It sounds
yeah, like. a little bit of everything. Romance, I had sci-fi, a little romance, kind of romance. There was a pre-apocalypse book started. Which was actually really interesting. And then, like I said, Emily's a YA fantasy author. So we had a good mix. And I don't feel like I got any super negative feedback. So
that's good. Okay.
Yeah, just some things I need to take in consideration now, though. One of the things I do like to do when I critique, and one other person did it as well, is using the ABCD method. And Mary Robinette taught us this on the Writing Excuses. It's on their podcast. It's on their website. But it's the awesome, bored, confused, didn't believe method.
Okay.
And then there's also an E if you want it, and it's expectations. And using that really helps me out. And hopefully it can help other writers out too when I do it. This is identifying good parts in the book that you felt were boring.
Okay.
Things that you were confused about or things you didn't believe because of the expectations that were set. And then E for expectations, that's you determine if it's fulfilling your expectations or it didn't fulfill the expectations, depending on what the writer promised in the beginning or not.
Okay.
But it's identifying those parts that may be broken. I'm not going to tell you how to fix your work. Like, that's not my job. My job is to let you know, hey, I was confused here. And then you can go back and reread it and find out if it is. If I'm the only one out of, like, even four people, you might want to just throw my opinion out there.
Right. And I like the reason I'm asking you these questions too, is this is the first time one of us has come fresh off of a critique or a conference that had a workshop element to it, you know?
Right.
And I think giving people something what to expect, I think, if they're thinking about doing a workshop heavy conference or retreat, I think is important, especially when it comes to critiquing. I think we should link to the ABCD method for sure in the show notes, just so people can kind of understand where you're coming from with that. But I think that's good, man. I haven't done a critique in a long time. Really long time.
It's nerve-wracking. I'm not even going to lie. Like, even when I'm giving someone else feedback on their work, it's like, one thing I don't like is when you're in first-person narrative and you have present tense and past tense in the same sentence.
Yeah.
It bothers me for some reason. I always pick it out, but I brought it up and Emily was like, no, it's fine. And I was like, eh, okay.
Yeah.
I guess that's just a me thing. So,
and I'll tell you what, that bothers me sometimes as well. And I think it helps. Well, it can help or hinder if I listen to an audiobook or not, but it kind of depends on a couple of factors. But I'm not a big fan of, I've said it before on the show, I'm not a fan of first person present like that. It's weird to me. I have a really hard time with it, but that's just me.
So I just finished the second in the series, and I'll have to post a link, but Sufficiently Advanced Magic, the Ascension Trilogy series. I'll post a link for it. It's first person narrative done really well. Okay. I don't like first person narrative, but I keep finding these series that are great, and it's just like I get lost in the world. And, like, you're discovering things with the first-person narrative.
Yeah.
So, I really like that.
Personally, I love first-person narrative. Like, if it's done well, I have a problem with the choice of tense when it comes to it. And that's what I'm trying to find the name of the book right now. It was a Star Wars novel I mentioned a while back. I just couldn't read the series because it was driving me insane.
Workshops are great. Critiques are great, too. If you have a certain way you want people to critique you, I do recommend that you let people know what kind of feedback you're looking for. Jesse Grayson, when she did her Betty reading, she gave everyone the ABCD method of all of it, the explanation, and then gave examples with her stuff. So,
and do you find, is this something that you can do with these types of critique workshops and say what you're looking for up front so people can focus on that? Is that what I'm asking?
Yeah, I believe you can.
Okay.
Whether people follow that or not in a workshop. I mean, they get the manuscript ahead of time. Mm-hmm. I didn't think anyone was going to do line edits, and I was wrong.
Oh, no.
So really? I had someone that went through and did line edits, and that's fine if you want to correct a couple, like I added two H's to a word or misspelled a word. The only issue I have with that is when you're eliminating sentences and rewriting them. Because I feel like that takes away from the author's style.
Oh, for sure.
So I don't recommend it.
Yeah.
But I mean, hey, you can do what you guys want to do.
I feel like there's a difference between editing and revision, obviously. But like, if it's a critique, it's not so much about... I mean, hopefully somebody's putting something forward that's polished. You know what I mean? But if there's a couple of spelling errors or something like that you missed, or some tense issues, or you know what I'm saying? It's a little minor things. I don't think that's worth spending time over. It's like, did the character come across? Did this, you know, because eventually you will fix the other stuff. You know what I mean?
And I agree with you. That critiques to me is you need to identify its character coming across, what's the character voice, expectations. Mm. If you're reading along. What's that?
I said, are you buying it? Are you buying the world? Are you?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Me going through and doing line edits on your stuff, like, that's just not, to me, that's just not good.
No.
Because that's just going to make, you're just going to get frustrated. I just wasted my time. Like, I'd rather give you the meat and potatoes of things like, hey, you did this really awesome with your character and setting up a great character arc later down the road. But this part here, I was really confused about, and I didn't believe it, and I'm not quite sure if it even fits. And then let the writer do their thing.
Right, exactly. All right, man. So takeaways, this is your first Featurescapes, obviously. Do you, checking in with people who came from far, far away, that we, Jesse, for example.
Oh, yeah.
Do you think she enjoyed her time, or?
I don't know. I can't speak for her. Of course. It was just a really not so well organized.
Okay.
Workshop.
Okay.
There was a lot of times where we were told something would be down in one room on one floor, but it turned out to be in another room and no one knew.
Okay.
And all the time no one knew exactly where to go. They would just happen to find someone else who knew.
Right.
By accident. And
someone who's done, like myself, who's done enough big conventions, like organization's a huge deal. Not knowing where to go on the boat, for example, would be a problem. You know what I mean? And in San Diego, when we go to Comic-Con, it's the same thing. If there's a change, you got to make it very well known and let people know where to line up and that kind of thing. It's all super. Organization's a huge part of it. And a lot of that comes from the top. A lot of that comes from who's putting the event together. And then at the same time, the communication from the top with who is implementing where the things are going, you know? That's too bad. The organization part's a huge, huge thing.
I think that's what killed it for me from the very get-go.
Yeah.
I know Jesse was kind of frustrated with that too. I did run into another WXR, a couple WXR alumni actually. But Hannah from our trip as well, got accepted and she went, and I didn't know she was going because she early in the year she told me that she tried to get in last year, didn't have the time to get off because they told her at the last minute.
So
she showed up there this year, and so we got to sit and hang out and for a little That's bit cool. I know her and Jesse got to catch up in LA or Salt Lake, one of the two, on their way home. But
that's awesome. Hannah's
doing good too, so it was good to see her and chat with her for a bit.
All right, man. So, anything else you want to say about this convention?
If you're looking for a good workshop to go meet people and kind of get your feet wet in the critique world and bar conning, I think it's a good one. For those of you that are a little bit more experienced in critiques and workshops and venturing out to different conventions and stuff like that, I don't know if I'd recommend it for you guys.
Got it. You heard it here first.
If anyone is part of Futurescapes and you hear this, I'm sorry. Email me, though. I will help you.
No, and that's the thing, man. I mean, anybody who's running a thing wants to know how to improve. The one thing, and this is of course, I always pull from San Diego, but Comic-Con on Sunday, they always have a panel at the end of the week. And they say, okay, what worked, what didn't work? And they've been improving every year. I mean, we had some issues years ago with various things. And they've improved on a lot of those things. And because people are like, hey, we didn't know where to line up for this. Or we didn't know that this was going on. And how can you improve this? And it's okay. And we're talking about critiques. It's okay to be critical. It's okay to say, hey, you know what? I loved meeting up with these people. But, you know, this didn't work for me. And the organization part didn't work for me. And that's totally valid, dude. It was your experience, and they are going to want to know that. So
I hope they ask us for our opinions on everything that happened and what we thought.
I'm wondering, do they send – I mean, they might send you a survey or something, and that's a good place to do it. I mean, I was just in Disneyland, and, you know, there's various places where they – you know, there was a festival going on and stuff like that. And, you know, I got an email, and I spent the time. It took me probably 15 minutes to do the survey, but it's a place I go every year, and I wanted to give my feedback. So I think it's important to be able to do that as well. So
yeah, no, I agree with you. Some of my bigger takeaways. So just for all of our listeners know too, I plan on being able to host one.
Yeah.
Either a retreat or a workshop or whatever we want in the next year or two, and so I'm just. Honestly, I'm just collecting knowledge and be like, okay, this did work for me. This didn't work for me. Talking to a few other writers that went. So if you guys have any advice or tips or anything like that of what you've liked at retreats and workshops, let us know.
All right, man. So what are we talking about this week? We're going to talk about a thing?
I mean, we're
almost at our time limit, but.
I mean, when did we hit record? So. Interesting perspective / tweet that I've seen this week that I kind of want to bring up on discussion with you is some we'll post. Should we post the tweet? Sure.
We can link to it.
So we'll link to it then. It was someone basically saying that sci-fi and fantasy writers would hold a lot more credibility if we address social issues in our writing rather than, oh, cool, spaceship. Let's run around with anti-gravity boots. Paraphrasing, but he did mention that. And so I just want to bring that up. Like, how, it was pretty offensive on a few different levels.
Oh, it's offensive.
But it's just one of those things I want to talk about. Let's talk about social issues. How do you address society in your writing?
Well, okay. So this is actually something that Maurice and I talked about when I sat down with him on the boat. And this was what I've been trying to get through, which is the main reason I write fantasy. And I love fantasy, is that it does address social issues. Now, I don't know the context of this person tweeting. I don't know if they're just being a troll or what, but it gives us a space to talk about this. But honestly, man, I, as a black man in this world, and we've talked about this before in mostly white communities, I've dealt with everything under the sun, right? And all the stuff that I've dealt with, I would like to reflect that somehow in my writing. I found in my creative writing classes and stuff like that, when I try to just write, when I tried to write non-genre fiction, I guess is the best way to say it, literary fiction, right?
Mm-hmm.
I found myself, I don't want to say not hampered. I can't really find the right word as a writer. I'm also really tired. I can't really find the right word to explain it, but I felt bored. That's the right word. I was bored. I was like, okay, well, I can write about the world that's literally around me, or I can write a new world that's reflecting what I have been through and what I want to show and the social issues I want to have underpinning what's going on in the story. Does that make sense? So
yeah.
I'm trying to figure out the best ways to deal with racism and classism and that kind of thing within a world that I've created, a world that I'm more interested in escaping to, right? For example, I don't know if you're a Game of Thrones fan, but I've read the books and, you know, the new season just started, and all of those things are underlying in fantasy always. Fantasy at its base level, because there's so many different races, right? It's racism. There's literal racism everywhere. If you go back to, I mean, if you go to dwarves and elves and like, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know if you read, I'm gonna soapbox for a minute. I grew up, reading Dragonlance, and then I got into Forgotten Realms. You know, I'm a big R.A. Salvatore fan, and obviously you have, you know, Driss, who's a dark elf, and all this other stuff. Obviously, that's all very surface level, but at the same time, if you play Dungeons and Dragons, or you read Forgotten Realms, or any of the stuff that comes out of, it used to be TSR, I guess now it's, Wizards of the Coast, you read any of that stuff, there is millennia of hatred between like races. And that is super reflective of what is happening in our world sans a couple millennia. You know what I'm saying? There are races that have hated each other for 1,000 years or more.
Yep.
And that is what we're writing about. Like, it's offensive to think that, oh yes, granted, I love gravity boots and, you know, dragons and stuff like that. But honestly, man, really what's happening is this race hates this race for reasons that nobody can explain, but it's still there. And that is literally what is in our world right now, even in 2019, you know?
Yeah, no, I agree with you on many levels, which you already know.
I appreciate that.
And one of the things I like to address, I'm a white male.
Yes.
Mainly raised, I mean, it's kind of clear I'm white, but
it's okay, buddy.
I grew up in, quote unquote, a broken home. And that growing up, that meant that your biological parents weren't married and that they either were separated, divorced, or both were remarried. Half my family's Hispanic and black, and my other family's hardcore white, German, Scandinavian, all along the spectrum, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like I got a good mix, but growing up predominantly around white people, though. Like, there's things I didn't get to see growing up. I didn't, like, it just wasn't part of my culture. It wasn't people I got to hang out with. So it's hard for me to address those issues from, yeah. from a standpoint of what you had to go through.
Right.
So when it comes to, like, social issues, especially with racism, I make it from my point of view and stuff. Like, I don't understand racism. I really don't. I just don't get it. And so I like to reflect that in my characters of just questioning, like, what is your deal? Like, you're not making any sense type of stuff, and always being willing to interject when there is something like that. I don't know. That's me. I play a lot into education because I feel like poverty-stricken areas aren't even on the same playing field as the average school district, and I don't think it's fair.
It's not even close.
Yeah. And that's a whole nother topic of discussion altogether. Right. But for me, when it comes to writing about social issues and the communities, like, I'm like you, I don't want to write about right now. Like, I'm trying to escape it.
Right.
Like, I see it, I deal with it, I do what I can, but I don't want to relive that every single time I put my hands on a keyboard. Like, I want to talk about 1,000 years from now, what does our education system look like? What's our economy look like?
Right.
What does the world look like?
And I've tried. Sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, or in a fantasy world, like, building an economy system. Why is it relying on this? Like, why is there racism and stuff like that?
And honestly, man, I've tried to write my own story and was bored. Only in that I'm like, okay, so.
I've tried that so many times. I can't get through the first 2 pages.
And I'm like, oh, black kid bullied, you know, whatever. It's like, okay, racism. Like, it bored me. And it's like, that's what I see every day. You know what I mean? That's not what I'm interested in. What I'm interested in is exactly what you said. Okay, so if I take a fantasy spin on what you just said, okay, well, what happens when a society is faced with X, Y, and Z that's beyond this? What do people do? What happens when factions have to work together, or why do these factions exist? You know what I mean? And is it race-based? Is it social? Is it, economic-based or whatever it is? And I find with fantasy and science fiction, you can play with all of those things at one time. For example, if I'm going to write the story of today and how a young child is bullied, and I get that people want to write literary fiction. I have a buddy who, published author, awesome dude. We used to work together, at the school, and he writes literary fiction. He's good at it. It drives me insane. I'm like, when is there going to be a dragon? Will there be a dragon? Are there any swords involved? Right. And honestly, that's the geek in me. But at the same time, too, it's like, okay, I can't, if it's set in 2019, okay, I know what the economic structure is like. So does everybody else. So I want to be able to create, I feel like I want to be able to create more and tell and actually say the same thing. And I don't want this to come across as a bash on literary fiction at all. I had a really tough decision to make when I was coming through college. Was I going to stay with what I loved and write science fiction and fantasy, or was I going to fall in line? And granted, I was at UC Santa Cruz. Okay. I mean, and everybody who came into the creative writing classes was writing literary fiction. And it's like, okay, cool. But can I write about dragons and stuff? And like anybody who read it was not into it. And I was trying to tell the things I was saying, but people weren't okay with the genre part of it. You know what I'm saying? So I know genres exist for a reason. But I think science fiction and fantasy exists for a very good reason. And look at Star Trek. I mean, how many social issues did Star Trek, tackle? You know what I mean? Since the what? 60s? You know what I mean? So I mean, that's case in point right there that yes, it is set in a, you know, 1,000 years from now, but they're still dealing with social issues that we face every day. And
well, it was pretty taboo when, was it Kirk and Uhura that
That was the first. That was the first interracial kiss on network television.
I mean,
it's a huge deal,
which is crazy to think about.
Right.
You know what I mean? But even nowadays, like I don't know that. I don't want to get too much into social issues outside of writing
on this, but let's bring it back to writing if we can, and close this out a bit. But I'm with you, man. I like that we took that tweet and kind of ranted a bit, because I think what's important is we write what we write because we like the genre that we write in, but we're all working within whether literary fiction, science fiction, fantasy, whatever. We're all still trying to reflect social issues and reflect racism and homophobia and everything else within that. You know what I'm saying?
Let me ask you this, though.
Please.
Let's take Lord of the Rings, for example, and we'll go to the Hobbit series, right?
Sure.
Let me phrase this right. No one goes around talking about the epic battle that they had with Smaug and why they loved it.
Right.
For one of the reasons why I really loved The Hobbit, at least the movie series,
yeah,
if you will. Natural disaster happened. They were without a home, and they needed to find a place. And amongst friends, even though with their dying breath, like, they found a home because it was always with them.
Right.
It didn't have to be about the mountain, right?
Right.
To me, I look at that like, hey, that's a homeless issue. Like, they were seeking refuge. They were feeling lost, and they knew where they wanted to belong, but didn't realize they already had it with their friends and stuff like that.
Exactly.
Same thing goes with Lord of the Rings. Like, no one talks about how great the battles were, how awesome the dragons are. Like, most people want to talk about Sam.
Yeah.
And Sam's character arc. Like, and so that's
that relationship with Frodo and how they got there. I mean, I think it's super important.
And with this tweet, like, you know, like, I don't know if this is a genre of fiction writer or what, but it's one of those things, like, that's not what we're not writing about. Like, yes, dragons are in it. Like, I have wyverns and dragons in mine, but mine is about accepting death, the loss of a loved one, mental illness, and then working through all that bullshit you have to go through on a day-to-day basis. And making new friends, like, you know what I mean? Like, yeah, there are dragons in it. Yeah, there's magic in it.
But that's the world, not the reflection of our current world. You know what I mean?
Oh, for sure. And I mean, if, like I said, I don't play too much on the perspective of a black male in my storylines. I can't really relate to it. So I do research, and I right now I write them as secondary characters.
Mm-hmm.
I would like to write at least a novella about first person narrative of the struggle of someone who is black in one of the worlds I've already created. I don't know. Well, I'll write that one day. But
and you could, I mean, man.
Research, I mean, has to go into it.
Yeah. Research, beta readers, and making sure you're coming across the way you want to come across. I mean, it's about you don't have to have experienced it in order to write about it necessarily.
Right.
But you do have to do your research.
As an example you provided earlier, the Forgotten Realms series with Dritzo Erden and R.A. Salvatore. R.A. Salvatore is a white guy.
Yep. I met him last year at Comic-Con.
And he wrote a really, like, and that one's always interesting to me, too, is Dritzo's stereotyped based on 1,000 years of culture misbehavior, if you will.
And almost banishment, because the Dark Elves, you know, they were on the surface, and then they weren't, and then the stigma of, as soon as you see a dark elf, you better fear for your life, you know, and that,
yeah,
and that goes back to everything that we've been dealing with as a culture in this country, for example. You know, I mean, there were people who were afraid, you know, every black guy they saw was going to go after their daughter or something. You know what I mean? It plays off that same, it plays off that same, stigma. You know what I mean?
And one of the things I like that R.A. Salvatore kind of underlines, and I don't know if he's knowingly doing it or if, and this is just me pulling things out of thin air, but I like how he plays off the unknown is scary.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that goes with a lot of races and magic that he uses and things like that, but the unknown is scary is something I've seen a lot in his stuff.
Yeah, and he's done it well. He created basically the Dark Elves as we know, and going into Minzo Berenzon and all that and dealing with that underworld of the Dark Elves, in those particular novels are some of my favorites, because, you know, I don't want to say white characters, but the non-drow characters going underground to, you know, try to help Drizzt, for example, you know, in the Underdark. There's an unknown there, but also it's basically taking people from where they're comfortable with and putting them in, putting them in the ghetto or putting them in another country or putting them somewhere where they are afraid, like, oh, what could happen? And who knows what's going to happen, but you have to deal with things as they come without taking something with you. You know what I mean?
Yeah. No, I like that you brought that example up because we've talked about it before. I feel like it within the media and the realm of perception, there's only so much you can intake as a person. And if you don't have firsthand experience, you have to rely on what you know. And if what you know is you've been watching, oh man, name a freaking movie involving a black person being portrayed as a ghetto thug who's just out to get you, like,
right.
There's countless, you know what I mean? Yeah. And as people who, let's say, are white or Hispanic or whatever other color, and they don't have any interactions with people that are black, like, that is what you're going to assume.
Mm-hmm.
Or even, like...
Well, hip-hop culture doesn't help either.
No. No. And that's one of the things that kind of gets under my skin is a lot of people in the hip-hop culture will complain about it, but then it's like... Have you listened to your own music? Do you realize what you say on there and like how you portray yourself in music videos? Like, you are influencing a lot of these people.
And it's sensationalizing a thing that, you know, may have come from a true place in the beginning, but it's certainly not the case now. So, well, my friend.
This is a good episode in my opinion.
That was good, man. That was fun. I'm glad we went down that path. I'm sure we'll go back there again, and I'd like to touch on some of this stuff another time. But honestly, man, I think it's a good thing to think about. Those of us that write genre fiction, even of us that don't, it's like, you know, we come from a place where we come from our own places, but at the same time, we can write these other things. And I think we have to reflect. I think all of us are going to reflect society regardless of the genre we write in. Is really the takeaway, I think. So this has been Just Keep Writing, a podcast for writers by writers to keep you writing. I am at Darth Pops on Twitter and Nick is at Bright Inks. You can find the show on iTunes and your favorite podcatchers. So like and share this show with your writing community. If you'd like to share or discuss anything we talked on the show, the last week's task or whatever you have going on, you can post it on our Discord channel, Facebook page, or send it to me. I am Marshall at MarshallCarr.com or Nick at NicholasBright at BrightInks.org. You can find our writing and the show notes for each episode on our websites, MarshallCarr.com and BrightInks.org. Lastly, if you want to support the show, the best way to do that is Patreon.com/JustKeepWriting. And you can find us there and give us a couple bucks an episode and help us do what we do, and we can help you.
You've got the homework done. You have a challenge up ahead of you. Now just keep writing.